Get me for free. Courtesy of Yelp for Restaurant. Tools and tactics are what's going to make you successful in 2024. Yelp for Restaurants has the tools you need to scale your restaurant this year, and I'm here to help. Sign up for a consultation with Yelp Guest Manager and get a free one-hour coaching session with me. In our session, we'll dive deep into your restaurant and build the blueprint to overcome your current obstacles and scale your profitability. You can sign up for both free sessions by simply going to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp today. I'll see you soon. Now here we go.
We are able to qualify a worker in advance, sending them over to an opportunity. For our small business owners, that's huge because many of them not only don't have the recruiting capabilities, they don't have the vetting capabilities either. And so we can ensure that a higher quality experience occurs on both sides.
Welcome to Full Comp, a show offering insight into the hospitality industry, featuring restaurateurs, thought leaders, and innovators. Served up on the house. Are you on track to hit your profitability goals for this year? If you're struggling to hit your numbers, I might be able to help. Here's how I do it. Every year, I offer 5 complimentary growth sessions to restaurant owners looking to scale. In this call, we'll examine your current situation to see what is and isn't working. We'll identify your growth possibilities by the close of the year. We'll uncover the number one thing holding you and your business back. And we'll develop a growth plan that will get your business results. Go to planwithjosh.com to schedule one of the 5 complimentary growth sessions. They're going to go quickly. They always do. Today's labor crisis stems from a labor shortage. There just aren't enough people willing to work in restaurants anymore. Or are there? Today we sit down with Amir Hemet of Welcome Tech to uncover the solution to our labor crisis. Amir and Welcome Tech have access to literally millions of legal workers qualified and excited to work in our industry. Who are these folks and where do they come from? Tune in to find out.
I spent most of my life assuming that I was going to be a physician. I actually went to medical school after undergrad. He was sort of inspired by my father, who's a physician, and really thought that that was the path to building something in life that would not only allow me to live a quality life and earn towards the type of quality that I wanted, but also to make an everyday impact. And that felt very fulfilling. After college, I had an opportunity to work with the state senate while I was in medical school and realized that there was this much larger world of opportunity out there where, although I could make an impact on a patient-by-patient basis as a physician, learned about this term, social entrepreneurism, where you could build businesses that made money but also made some sort of impact. At the time, it was referred to as the double bottom line. And that really inspired me and really hit home with what was true to me. And from there, realized that there were some major business schools like, you know, Stanford, Duke, Harvard that were teaching about this topic. This is in the early 2000s. And it gave me more motivation to pursue what ultimately I'm focused on, which is building businesses that are making an impact in the world and solving real problems for the world, while obviously achieving some incredible returns for management and our shareholders.
I was doing exhaustive research for the show and I came across this quote that I want to share. And then I kind of want you to explain to me what it means to you. And the quote is, "Life and all of its parts are nothing but one big opportunity."
Yeah. In some ways, I am one of the fortunate ones to realize that early on in life. The challenge I faced was as a cancer survivor in 2012. So thankfully, very grateful to be over 10 years in remission. But going through an experience like that, in my case, I had stage 3 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, went through about 9 months of chemo, totally caught me, my family, my business partner by surprise, and had to navigate that experience, which is probably a podcast all to its own. But as you're digging through that sort of mess, and it comes in different packages for different people, I think you start to hopefully turn the corner at some point and stop asking how or why and really start asking, what am I going to get out of this? Why am I on this path? And for me, what came through was that really even something as dark and challenging as navigating a illness like cancer can provide opportunities. In my case, it was making deeper connections with close friends, having a chance to connect to practices like meditation, and really putting myself in a place where those of us who are blessed in life, and most of us probably in the US in particular, your audience are among those I would categorize as blessed, find it challenging to sort of dig deeper. And in my case, I couldn't have manufactured something in life that would have forced me to dig deeper, but that part of my life did. And through it came the fact that everything's an opportunity, man. This whole journey, everything that we as humans label as challenges, as opportunities, as good and bad, that's human made versus whatever you believe put us here or whatever you believe created us. I don't know that they had a sense for labeling good and bad, but ultimately it's an opportunity. And connecting with you and I think other like-minded people, it's just a more fun way to live life. So I'm all about it.
I want to talk about fear. So I would imagine that going through something so traumatic kind of changes your perspective on fear and what inspires fear. When I opened my restaurant, I was fearless the day before it opened. And then I was just wrought with fear in all of the days that passed since the day that it opened. And then eventually, it wasn't even about achieving the dream that we had initially set out to do, right? It was just about trying to experience some semblance of relief as I'm trying to cobble together this business that is multifaceted and just an incredibly human enterprise where things are going wrong all of the time. And ultimately, I found myself a year, 2 years, 3 years into the journey, not motivated by optimism or hope, but ultimately motivated by fear. And it informs the choices that you make in your career, especially as an entrepreneur. You don't pursue certain things because you're afraid. And I would assume that in beginning your entrepreneurial journey with cancer survival in the rear view, that you just had a very different perspective on fear, on entrepreneurship, on impact. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's super interesting you're bringing this up. It's come up in a lot of different forms and fashions. Sometimes it's having a discussion with a friend who might be navigating life from a place of fear, or other times it's getting a gauge of how much risk I'm willing to take around something on the business front. And no doubt going through an experience like I had that I wouldn't wish on anybody else, but certainly the benefits came out of it were just a realization that outside of the life and death sort of things that we all deal with or we might deal with, not a whole lot else shakes me these days. I'd say similar to taking that cold shower in the morning, you learn how to like resolve stress pretty efficiently as a result of going through a tough experience and keeping things in perspective, which can work in your favor in most cases. But sometimes I ask myself, well, shouldn't I be afraid? Shouldn't I be concerned about something I'm dealing with? But what I try to recognize and what might be useful to folks listening is the type of fear that's paralyzing, the type of fear that's actually deterring from where you're ultimately trying to go. Because I think if folks have the ability to take a step back and take a breather around whatever they're fearing, one, they'll realize that there's a more positive way to approach these scenarios, probably one that's focused much more on opportunity than it is fear. You're going to be coming up with better solutions, be much more resourceful, and honestly, probably feel a lot more fulfilled. The other side of it is that we all face fear. We all have fear. I wouldn't try to pretend that I don't have those moments. But if you can also try to digest those scenarios and break them down into more digestible pieces, the fear can be overcome. And just reminding ourselves that, again, outside of our health and life and death for ourselves or our families, the rest of it is kind of just a game and you got to be up for it. You signed up for it, so you might as well play it and play it as well as possible, but not necessarily get consumed by things that aren't necessarily life or death or anything of that nature.
I had you on the show because I think that you and your company, Welcome Tech, you're tackling a very interesting problem that's really relevant to the industry at large. But I mean, coming out of your educational background, I think you had the opportunity to tackle any one of a number of large problems. You chose immigration. Why did you choose immigration, and how ultimately does it impact industries like the hospitality industry?
I got to be honest, Josh, some days I feel like I didn't choose immigration, it chose me. I don't know that people I grew up with or close friends of mine ever assumed that I'd be a expert on the topic and someone that is, dare I say, a thought leader around how to resolve some of the challenges that we're facing, not only in the U.S., but globally on the topic of immigration. And so often you'll say, you know, I'm on a random path of life. But I would argue there's certain things about your strengths that you're drawn to. And given this problem, this challenge, I've sort of been honed over time to be the right kind of person to be able to bring all the pieces together to solve it. So my parents are immigrants to the U.S., both grew up in Iran. My mom spent some time in France and landed in Miami in the mid-70s. One of those classic immigrant stories where they didn't come with much. In their case, they had the golden ticket of education, but had every intention of actually returning to their home country. But that opportunity didn't exist for them because of the revolution that occurred in Iran. And so really had to make their way, navigating, figuring out how to establish their lives, build a community, connect to critical resources. And so me and my brothers, we grew up certainly exposed to this experience, but you take it for granted as a child. It's just what you know. And so I can't admit that that was necessarily what inspired all this. Although later in life, when I started working with government and doing work in communities, I was exposed in a greater scale. My previous business was an educational platform for specifically Hispanic immigrants in the U.S., where we provided all the media content to the waiting rooms of consulates and embassies in the U.S. And it was during that period that became more and more aware. We set out to build what was one of my initial social entrepreneurial ventures, which was a national platform to educate immigrant communities. What we realized in that process was that there really needed to be a platform for immigration that was missing. We don't have a digital Ellis Island here in the U.S. We don't have a formal onboarding integration support platform for immigrants. And going into now 2024, it's just astonishing that I'm still waking up every day and this is a challenge that can be solved. But to your original question, could it have been in healthcare? Could it have been in education? Yes, all of that was on the table without a doubt. But I've been drawn forward into this year over year and have had plenty of chances to step away and work on other things. But it's a massive challenge that we're facing on a global scale. And there's a large part of me that's doing this, one, because obviously I think there's an opportunity to empower immigrants and their families. But I also feel as a nation, we have the opportunity to be the example to the world using data and technology to build a effective onboarding and support system for our immigrant populations and compete at the levels that we need to attract the best of the best talent and enable that talent here in the U.S. And so that's what we're aiming for. That's what we're hoping for. But I can't tell you there was a perfect plan laid for me to land on this particular challenge for the world.
It's a massive problem. And, you know, you used the word a couple of times that I want to highlight because in preparing for our conversation and talking with other people about you and about what you do, I used the word onboarding to describe it because I think that it perfectly encapsulates what you guys do. It's an onboarding platform to get people into and productive within the country from all other walks of life, from all other countries. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, often I'll say, if you think of countries as you do companies, you would want to attract great talent and then enable that talent. And that's really what our intention is. Ultimately, to be competitive as a nation, we need to be able to not only attract great talent, but once they're here and once they are within our borders, let's give them every chance to be productive participants in society who can contribute to our overall success. And onboarding is certainly a way that we think of it. And if onboarding is done effectively, just like works for the talent at your restaurant or at your company, then you're going to have somebody who's effective over a lifetime because of that training and support that they were provided. And so we think the ROI for that effective onboarding is very powerful.
And you've raised, I can't remember the last number, I think it's like a kajillion dollars for this thing.
You know, we've attracted a lot of venture capital to the business, and we've had a lot of private and family office investors. At this point, we're making our way, you know, north of $70 million that we've raised as a business. But I'll tell you, I think there's a whole subject to be talked about in terms of raising capital and why capital for our particular business. But we're solving a massive problem. Like I said, we're in 2024 and we had the largest run-up of immigration in the country just in the last year in recent history. And so I can't tell you I would have assumed this challenge would have still existed when I started on this journey in 2024, but it's bigger than ever. And you are going to need to capitalize the solution to be able to solve it at the scale that we're dealing with today. So I don't think every business needs venture capital. I don't think every business is built to take on as much capital as we have. But for our business and our strategy and what we're ultimately trying to be, it makes sense to have done that. And I hope those listening can take in how large of a challenge we're trying to tackle. And relative to that challenge, if you look at other types of companies, we've been very capital efficient, if you can believe it. And so there are companies solving things of smaller nature and not necessarily trying to impact the world we are that have received a lot more capital than us. So I would tell you that we're very proud of the fact that we've been able to attract the type of capital, which is institutional capital, to this problem and to this challenge, and dare I say, to this community, because historically, venture capitalists haven't necessarily spent a lot of time, funding, energy around businesses supporting the demographics that we do. And so we've been really breakthrough in our ability to attract that capital for this challenge and for this community.
Well, I saw it as an amazing opportunity to have you on the show, because when we think about immigration, I think that there's a direct impact on the hospitality industry. We've been in the midst of a labor crisis, I'll argue since 2018, but probably before then, even though it hit the headlines in 2020 and 2021. And so today people are talking about it. It was a quiet crisis in the years before. And we know that there are people out there that are excited to work in the industry and would be willing to work their butts off if given the opportunity. There's just not that direct path there. And so in solving this immigration issue, I suspect that you could have also solved this endemic issue that we find within the industry as well. How do you think about that in terms of funneling labor?
Yeah. So I thought I would start this discussion with saying that I am not a restaurant owner. I have not been building restaurants for the last 20 years. However, I see the industry as a real partner in the work that we're doing, because our history as a company is one where we've focused on servicing what is generally the low wage hourly workforce in the US, in the immigrant communities that we serve. And our work began with providing resources directly to those communities. But where we are today in the life of our business is that business owners have come to us and said, we need your tools. We have workers that we have never been able to provide resources to. We are struggling to reach this workforce because the traditional channels to reaching workforces don't reach this demographic effectively. Let's partner. We'll provide benefits to our workers in a way that haven't been provided before so that we can improve the turnover numbers that exist in our industry. And we want to reach into what is now a database of over 4 million workers nationwide that are profile down to zip code, who are motivated and anxiously looking for opportunities, but do not connect with employers efficiently because the traditional channels don't allow for that. And so these days, employers in particular within the restaurant industry are a key partner in solving this challenge around immigration. And I know that might sound astonishing to people, but when you think about efficient channels to reaching this demographic, it's clear. You just need to look at the numbers on the percentage of the labor force in the restaurant industry that is made up of immigrant households. And the numbers are there that this is a critical channel for us to be able to deliver value to our immigrant community members, and that it can be a huge help to the restaurant industry as we solve this together.
Well, and I think it's also important to call out the demo. I think that there's an inherent bias probably in the idea of immigrants, right? That these are people that can't read, can't write. But I mean, these are diligent professionals. They, for the most part, have worked successfully in their native countries for years and years. And I don't want to glaze over the fact that you said there are, what, 4 million people on platform actively looking for work?
That's right. So a few points I'll make there. One is that the largest immigrant population in the world is the Hispanic immigrant population we have in the U.S. So when you use the word immigrant as it relates to the U.S., you have to recognize that we are largely speaking about the Hispanic population. Obviously, we have other segments that are growing as well. But here in the U.S., that's the reality we face. And so certainly as business, we've been thoughtful about how to service that demographic and win there first. Because the scale that that opportunity provides then allows us to move into other immigrant demographics domestically, as well as build a model that we can scale globally. But we are heavily focused on the Hispanic immigrant population. And today we see that population, you know, in the kitchens, in the service divisions of every restaurant in the country, frankly. And so it's an opportunity for us to partner with an industry to make sure they are more efficiently servicing this workforce and they're more efficiently reaching them. And to your question, yes, today on an annual basis, we reach about 9 million community members across the country. And from that, we've got over 4 million and growing in our database who have been profiled down to zip code nationwide and are eligible and seeking work opportunities. And so we want to be able to bring that resource to the restaurant industry because it's lacking, and the traditional channels, the ZipRecruiters, the Indeeds, et cetera, they will openly admit that it's a challenge for them to reach this demographic. It hasn't been their focus. The other reality that I think everybody will agree with is most industries historically have just not built for this demographic. So when you think about the types of resources that might be required of these community members or this workforce, the industries that they would normally depend on haven't really invested a ton in building specifically for them. So if you're a restaurant owner right now trying to think about how to either recruit from this demographic or retain your workforce by providing value to them, you're struggling to find who to turn to for those resources because the reality is there's just not a lot of people who are building for this demographic. And that's astonishing given the census numbers that you see and how massive this population is to our GDP, as well as to where our nation is going. And so hopefully we'll see that change. We're hoping to lead the charge on that change, but we're one of the few companies that's actually very much focused on building tools specifically for the demo.
Let's talk about benefits, because you briefly mentioned it just now, but I think it's worth bringing up as well. For getting like recruitment and placement, you guys also do a lot with retention through benefits. Talk to me about what that looks like.
Yeah, so just taking a step back for a moment, we were asking ourselves, how do we solve this challenge, right? Where specifically we see a huge turnover rate in the QSR world, right? Quick service restaurants. And this is a category where you're seeing over 100% turnover, and that's the gold standard. And so when you try to tackle the challenge there, you ask yourself, how do we get the strongest ROI? What tools, what value can we provide this workforce so that they're more motivated? And as you looked at the numbers, you realized there was an opportunity to solve something that hasn't been solved for this demographic, which is an availability of benefits of some nature for this workforce category and, frankly, their household, right? If you're an hourly wage worker in this country, frankly, for many more of us as well, but particularly for them, an example is health insurance, right? It is really about catastrophic care. You're not coming out of pocket to pay when you're living paycheck to paycheck for your health insurance or your deductible. And that leaves you and your family very vulnerable. And there's an opportunity for us to create value there because it doesn't have to be that way. That's the reality. But the list goes on and on. When you look at Fortune 500 executives and the types of value that they receive from the company and their benefits packages, how do we bring something similar like that to this workforce? And how do we do it cost efficiently? And partly where we landed is that for what amounts to about 25 cents, maybe less in some cases where organizations are larger, an hour for that worker. You can provide them and their entire family really, really valuable benefits, healthcare, dental care, mental health, pet care, even things like car insurance, et cetera, that can be impactful. And it comes as a result of the collective buying power. And so some industries have PEOs that they work with, and others have buying organizations that will work with them. Again, this is a workforce that just has not had representation. And as a company, what we've done is aggregated a historically fragmented demographic, and through that aggregation, bring buying power. And we can lend that buying power to our employer partners, whether they be in the restaurant industry or otherwise.
And does that extend beyond the people that they're recruiting through the platform to their existing employees?
Yes, most definitely. So we can today work with an organization to provide benefits to their full workforce, and in particular, their lower wage and hourly workforce. We can do it, like I said, at right around 25 cents an hour extra. That covers not only that individual, but their entire household. And much of that happens as a result of our buying power, as well as our ability to leverage technology to integrate with these service providers and rip inefficiencies out of the system that don't need to be in place. And so what we will share with folks is that, unfortunately, as we've been navigating and building these services, you start to see some dynamics that exist in the benefits world that make it more difficult for employers to provide this type of value to their workforces. Because in most cases, when you speak to employers, they want to treat their workers great. I mean, especially in the restaurant industry, there's such tight bonds built. People who have been working with them for years and years, and having to lose folks just for an extra dollar or two an hour for someone down the road. But with wages increasing and pressures like Walmart and Amazon and Uber and others who are attracting this workforce away, it's really challenging for our restaurant owners to maintain their labor force. And we want to make it much more efficient for them.
Well, it also makes it a great job for the people that we're recruiting through the platform as well.
No doubt. In order to be able to communicate that you can have this job at the restaurant. And by the way, the numbers are there. This immigrant population loves to work in the restaurant industry. I mean, there's just no doubt that there's trade-offs there, right? They can go get a construction job or work more flexible hours elsewhere. And one of the ways we can make it more attractive for folks is to arm the restaurant owners with the ability to communicate that from day one, you can join our organization and have key benefits for you and your family. And it can be done in Spanish and English, and it can be done at the quality of Fortune 500 type benefits, which honestly has not been available historically for this demographic. And we're very excited to bring it to industries like this one.
It's super exciting. I want to go back and I want to talk about the individuals involved for a minute. So when we look at the 4 million people, it would be great to know how you acquire them, how they're vetted. What does top of funnel look like for this? What process are they going through before they ultimately make it as a candidate for employment at a restaurant?
Yeah, great question. So our company, Welcome Tech, is focused on primarily building the future of immigration, and as such, being a resource and education platform for our immigrant communities in the U.S. So we very intentionally have positioned our brand as a resource platform for immigrants. And as a result, we have a massive top of funnel, in part as a result of a relationship we have with consulates and embassies in the U.S. So we have contracts with foreign governments to have access to the waiting room areas of consulates and embassies in the U.S., the largest one being the Mexican Consular Network that sees over 7 million visitors a year across their 50 locations, the largest consulate and embassy network in the world. And other channels that have become available to us because we take this educational and impact first approach have led to us now growing at about 100,000 new members a month. And so it's exciting growth trajectory for us that we're making our way to 10 million in the years to come. And that's what our investors are excited about. But within that group, there's an enormous amount of interest around income generation, job opportunities. And so as a part of that, we make it possible for community members who might come to us initially for education information to then sign up to be seeking job opportunities through our platform. And that's where they'll fill out a fuller profile. We'll get a deep understanding of their areas of interest, their historical work, what they're interested in pursuing going forward, even down to pay expectations. And so we are able to really qualify a worker in advance of sending them over to an opportunity. And especially for our small business owners, that's huge because many of them not only don't have the recruiting capabilities, they don't have the vetting capabilities either. And so we can ensure that a higher quality experience occurs on both sides and ultimately make it much more efficient, right? This approach that we take is far more cost efficient, both on the costs that I think are very visible to the standard employer and some that are actually not taken into consideration when going through the recruiting process. There's a lot of inefficiencies in the process that add costs that aren't necessarily dollars, but it's your time as well. And to be a great restaurant owner, to scale your restaurant business today, you've got to be effective at recruiting and retaining your workforce.
And then in terms of location, I mean, 4 million people is a ton of people. And having 100,000 added to the platform, I would assume that this isn't just for major markets, that you have people in secondary, tertiary markets. You guys are everywhere, right?
Yeah, we're nationwide. We cover the full country. The advantage we have in working with consulates and embassies and now having a massive digital footprint as well is that each of these consulates service particular jurisdictions where a person arriving needs to provide evidence of their address, their zip code, so that they can receive services. And so it gives us an ability to sort of geolocate and be able to really target down to any zip code across the country when it comes to recruitment. So whether you're in Maine or you're in San Diego, we can help you out.
It's an interesting dynamic because it's, I think that we're all striving towards. We met through Ed O'Rallo, who's been a friend forever. And as I'm conceptualizing new business ideas, we always talk about this idea of like a win-win-win, right? That like you win, your strategic partners win, your customers win. It seems like that's really what you've ultimately developed here. Yeah?
I'd like to believe so. I take inspiration from businesses like Costco and Amazon Prime, to be honest, because if you spend some time understanding those business models, they're very much aligned for creating value for your customers and being in a position to do that. Much of that starts with winning at the distribution acquisition side of the equation. So in our case, what we realized is that if we could solve for reaching this demographic very efficiently, distribution and acquisition, we could leverage that aggregation for both buying power as well as enormous data to be able to more efficiently convert the consumer onto services that are valuable to them. And with that buying power, you can just generate more and more value for the consumer than really anybody in the world as a result of the insights and the buying power that we've achieved with our business model. So you look at Costco when they have the ability to really manage their margins on the services that they offer in the store because they have a subscription offering that they're seeing 100% margin on every day. And they want to be sure when Josh is shopping at Costco, he's extremely pleased and he doesn't think twice about paying that annual subscription fee. Similar with Amazon Prime, right? They've just been phenomenal with their distribution and that gives them huge buying power, huge flexibility on what services they need to drive margins in and which they don't. Our business has a subscription model behind it, similar to what we do on the employer side. For the consumer, they're able to pay a monthly fee to access these critical services. It just gives us a lot more leverage to be able to be disruptive around service categories that historically really been predatory, if I may say, around this demographic, and this no longer needed to be the case.
I want to end the conversation on an interesting note. I want to talk about balance. So again, in doing research, I noticed that you've traveled to every continent except Antarctica, but you plan to.
That's right.
And you've raised $70 million and you're trying to change the face of immigration in the United States. And you have two children and a wife. Balance has to be something that either you have mastered or you struggle with on a minute by minute basis. all kind of frame through your experience with surviving a severe illness and how that's reframed your perspective over the last 10 years since then. So how do you view it?
Well, my first response is balance is in the eye of the beholder. At the end of the day, what may be balanced to one person may look different to another. And then if you use that as a backdrop for the framework, I would say being intentional in life is something I really strive for. And it's an everyday challenge. All of us, I think, would benefit from being more intentional about life and where we're spending our time and where we're finding fulfillment. And so ultimately, the way I manage the stress of a very challenging schedule is by finding fulfillment around the intentionality of my day, knowing that I'm not going to get to everything that I would like to, but I at least have agreed with myself on what is going to be most fulfilling. And in my case, I really strive to be a good father and husband, and that's going to be the highest priority for me. And as a result, I've got to have a phenomenal team around me to make sure that the things that we need to move forward as a business are happening. And so I've been very fortunate building an incredible team. We've got a powerful mission that attracts incredible talent that could be working anywhere in the world, and they're choosing to solve this problem. And so certainly that works to my favor. But I'm human every day, looking to improve on the last one. But I do think realizing that in a chaotic world where you're trying to achieve a lot and stay ambitious, being intentional, understanding what you value in life, and building your schedule and time allotment around that is really critical.
Our industry suffers from razor-thin margins, and the only way for us to ensure profitability is to make data-driven decisions. The numbers don't lie, and Yelp for Restaurants just released some incredibly compelling numbers. For starters, Yelp reaches 9 times more customers online than OpenTable. And when restaurants pair that level of visibility with Guest Manager and Yelp ads, they experience up to an 8% lift in diner bookings. Think about what that 8% lift could do for your restaurant's finances. To learn more about how Yelp for Restaurants can support your business, visit restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to learn more today. That's Amir Hemet. For more information on Amir and Welcome Tech, visit welcome.tech. If you want to tell us your story, hear previous episodes, or check out our other content, go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a review. A special thanks to Yelp for helping us spread the word to the whole hospitality community. I'm Josh Copel. You've been listening to Full Comp.